Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Dandy Zhu, and you're listening to Digital Health Forward, a podcast dedicated to sharing the stories of healthcare entrepreneurs, leaders, and executives who are moving the digital health industry forward. Today, I had the opportunity to chat with Lauren Lee, Global Head of Digital Health at Ipsen. Ipsen is a global specialty-driven biopharmaceutical group focused on innovation and specialty care. Ipsen develops and commercializes innovative medicines in three key therapeutic areas: oncology, neuroscience, and rare diseases. As Global Head of Digital Health, Lauren leads a team to deliver beyond the drug solutions for patients, caregivers, physicians, and payers through human-centered design, cross-functional collaboration, and value-based partnerships. Lauren, thank you so much for taking time to join the podcast today. Excited to learn more about your personal journey through healthcare and most recently, what you've been up to as Global Head of Digital Health at Ipsen. You're also the first guest we've had from a biopharma company, so I'm looking forward to hearing your perspectives on digital health from that vantage point as well.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Great. So to start, would love to just hear a bit more about your background, your personal story, where your interest in healthcare really stemmed from, and where you've been since you started out at McKinsey a while back.
Yeah, sure. I'll give you my life story here because my interest in healthcare then comes from a consistent theme around broadening access for people who are less privileged or with opportunities. So my background, I was born and raised in China, and I would say the first and greatest blessing in my life was my family. I was born into a loving family who really value education. And my grandparents were actually among the first generation of people who went to university in China. And they put a huge emphasis on education just throughout our family. My parents and I have seen firsthand how access to opportunities like education tremendously changed people's lives. So that was something I always felt really lucky about in my life. And so earlier when I was in middle school, high school, did a lot of volunteering work around education opportunities for students in rural areas, et cetera. The idea that access to healthcare is also a fundamental human right and has huge impact on families' lives didn't really enter my mind until end of high school and beginning of college. So I came to the US to study at Princeton University. And around that time, my grandmother actually got diagnosed of bladder cancer for the first time. And since then, it's been a journey of over a decade. She's actually had it now 5 times. Most recently, just last month, she went through another round of surgery, is in remission again. She's a feisty lady, you know, really strong. I have huge respect for her, but just seeing over the years how my parents have navigated her care process in China and the quality of care, how that varies across different geographies in a country like that, showed me the impact of bringing quality healthcare to patients around the world can have. You know, the idea of healthcare, like as I enter my mind around college time, but when I graduated from university, went to McKinsey, I was in the Toronto office, and we actually didn't do a lot of healthcare work in the Toronto office at that time. So I did, you know, what's typical of a BA, of a random walk, different industries, different functions, more to just build up my basic business skill set. But through that experience, actually, I got exposed to Princess Margaret Cancer Center, which is the leading cancer hospital in Canada and one of the top 5 in the world. So I was able to do a bunch of volunteering, pro bono consulting for them, and got to experience closer to the front line what cancer care can mean, and really got interested in that. So after McKinsey, I decided to work for Princess Margaret Cancer Center, and so spent some time there before going to business school. Once I was in business school, I was pretty focused on healthcare, but you know, reflected on my experience at Princess Margaret and thought I want to pivot to the manufacturer side of healthcare. So things like biotech, pharma, medical devices. And business school was a really helpful period to explore the different areas. And eventually I landed on biotech, went through a variety of different roles within biotech at Amgen before I joined Ipsen.
Thank you for sharing, Lauren. It sounds like your grandma is definitely a fighter, and I hope she recovers soon. I think for a lot of us in the healthcare industry, there's a personal story like that that's been a big driving force in our motivations to make an impact in the space. And for me, it was also my grandma. When I was in middle school, she died of an avoidable heart attack. And that's what ultimately led me to want to study bioengineering in college and also to pursue a career in healthcare. So as we look to your last and most recent career transition, I'm curious what led you to join Ipsen and what it means to be global head of digital health.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much for your kind wish for my grandmother. She's in remission now. She's doing really well. So thank you really for that. My path within biotech has also been a meandering learning process. So when I left business school, you know, I thought biotech is at the cutting edge of medicine, right? I thought it was super exciting, the innovation that's happening with the molecular biology that we now understand different diseases. And I wanted to be at the engine of the frontier of medicine. So I went into the commercial part of biotech, which means, you know, sales, marketing, business intelligence. It's the whole process around how to bring a drug to patients who really need it. And that I thought was really meaningful because of the reason I was interested in healthcare was to help bring quality healthcare, whether that's therapeutics, diagnostics, or devices to patients who need them around the globe. So I did a variety of roles in that aspect at Amgen, but also got opportunity to go into digital innovation and digital health. And that really opened my eyes to what technology can do for healthcare, and especially coming from a non-science background. You know, I was an econ major in college and then obviously did my MBA. So for someone with my background, I thought, you know, I would never be at the engine of the basic research. But what I can play a role is to translate what technology can offer into the business languages that biopharma business stakeholders can understand, right? So what can technology do for enabling precision medicine? How can we help physicians choose the right drug for the right patient at the right time of their journey and help them stay on that drug at the right dosage? So that's the whole commercial aspect of Beyond the Drug that I got exposed to through the different opportunities I was given at Amgen at that time, and actually got to do that in not only US, but also in Europe. So it was really fun to live in Switzerland and go to different countries in Europe and understand the different healthcare systems and how digital health can play a big role from the pharma side. So from there, when Ipsen reached out to me, which was end of last year, it was really at a good timing. So professionally, I got really interested in digital health and wanted to focus on that. The role at Ipsen is based in Cambridge, and it is to be the global head of digital health for therapeutic areas that I'm really passionate about, oncology, neuroscience, and rare diseases. So it felt like a perfect time.
Wow, that sounds like the dream, to find the right role and the right geography at the right time in your professional trajectory. So taking stock of where the biopharma industry is in terms of tapping into the power of tech, what do you see as the most exciting Beyond the Drug innovations that are happening right now? And what trends are you following?
I think just looking broadly in the biopharma industry, I say there are three general stages where technology enters the picture. There is the stage of business development, external innovation, where, as you know, a lot of biopharma companies these days are relying heavily on external innovation to identify the next big asset. So technology can play a role in going through the myriad of potential asset targets and facilitating the understanding of the mechanism of action through, you know, gleaning public information, publications, et cetera, and also the due diligence process. And then the next phase is once an asset enters into the clinical trial setting, there is just ripe opportunities for leveraging technology to decentralize clinical trials, so to speak. So solutions like digital virtual recruitment for patients to participate in the trial, digital consent, ePRO, so electronic patient reported outcome solutions, digital biomarkers, which are particularly salient in the COVID environment when there is risk for patients entering the hospital. And then the third phase is in the commercial setting. So meaning a drug has already been studied in clinical trials and then has launched onto the market. There, that's primarily where my team focus on is in this part, is looking at how we can leverage technology to add value to our portfolio beyond the drug. So in the pre-prescription phase, a lot of it is around accelerating the diagnosis, offering clinical decision support for physicians, again, to think about who's the right patient for specific therapies, and raising awareness of the treatment options that are innovative. Then there is also the post-prescription phase. Once the patient is on the therapy, we want to make sure they are responding well to the treatment and the adherence and compliance aspect, quality of life aspect is very important. So remote patient monitoring solutions are really hot right now. And then throughout all of this, there is, of course, the real world evidence aspect. I think one of the key value propositions of digital health is the ability to generate continuous and objective data. So with that comes additional insights into the disease state, into the patient journey, and ultimately better solutions for patients.
And how do you and your team think about how to capture value from these opportunities? Are you generally looking to build solutions yourself in-house, or have you partnered with other digital health companies to do so?
That's a great question. And I feel like the million-dollar question that every pharma company who's trying to do digital innovation is asking is buy versus partner or build versus partner. For us, at a high level, we're open to both solutions, both channels. And we deploy a mix of that based on the needs of our customers, the patients, physicians, and payers, as well as the business.
That makes sense. And it's such a personal equation for every organization, depending on your capabilities and how you want to allocate capital in the short term versus the long term. As a digital innovation team within a larger biopharma company, I'm curious how you go about integrating culture and the way of working and decision-making processes with the rest of the company when the fundamental nature of the work that you're doing is so different.
Yeah, that's a great question and an interesting one, because when I was considering the move from Amgen to Ipsen, actually the size of the two companies was one of the factor. And so Amgen is a much larger company. It is the largest biotech in the world right now. So it's about 10 times the size in terms of revenue to Ipsen, and then also 10 times the size of an organization to navigate. And I think the Amgen team innovation has done a tremendous job and very interesting impact. But certainly when one is championing innovation in a large organization like that, there is a lot more stakeholder education, change management that need to happen. And I think typically coming from a digital health company's point of view, it takes much longer to get that internal champion to go through the onboarding of stakeholders and then go through contracting, et cetera. Versus when I look at Ipsen, which is a mid-sized biotech, it's smaller, it's leaner, it's in many ways more agile just as a whole. And therefore, when we look at digital innovation, it is also much more simplified process to get things going. And then specifically, the company's setup for digital innovation, as you alluded to, is also very important. So at Ipsen right now, what I really appreciate is the way the digital team is structured is a very centralized team. So we are part of the broader strategy and transformation group, right? Meaning we are very closely linked to the overall strategy and transformation journey for the whole company. So that's one aspect I really appreciate it in as a central group with dedicated budget and the clear mandate. We then can work with the functional country teams to make sure we are addressing the topics that are relevant for them, but providing a central level of expertise and quality in the projects we drive.
Yeah, I imagine it makes a huge difference to have full support of the leadership team and visibility like that. When we look across all of these different beyond the drug innovations, whether it's pre or post prescription, what do you feel like have been some of the biggest challenges in terms of capturing value? Is it around the implementation phase? Is it around adoption, measuring outcomes, or something else?
It's an interesting question. And it reminded me, I don't think I addressed one of your earlier questions, which is which one of the big trends in pharma has been further along in terms of adoption. So here I would say commercial is the area that's less adopted in terms of innovation. And my personal feeling is the furthest is along is in the clinical trial setting. So as I mentioned earlier, the technology solutions that can accelerate and optimize clinical trials, I've seen more activity across biopharma companies in exploring and experimenting, implementing that. And I think there the reason is clinical trials are extremely expensive and very long, right? Mm-hmm. So any solution that can shorten that time has a very clear business case. So in particular, in the COVID setting, has made it a prime opportunity to adopt those solutions versus for in the commercial setting, when we look at the beyond the drug solutions, one challenge is honestly the regulatory landscape for pharma. We have very clear guardrails as an industry, how we can interact with physicians and with patients for very good reasons, right? The industry should be very thoughtful that we are protecting patients' privacy, their health information, and then we are not interfering with the decisions of physicians in their practice of medicine. At the same time, as we are trying to reimagine the role that biopharma companies can play in delivering value to patients and physicians beyond the drug, we also sometimes feel constrained in the interpretations of those regulations, right? Because if the regulation focus on biopharma's role in just providing the drug, then it's harder to think about how what we can do in helping with risk prediction and disease prevention. That's not just the drug themselves. So I think that's one aspect where a lot of companies are trying to understand what can or cannot be done as a pharma in terms of the solutions we can offer to our customers. And I think a second challenge is the business case, right? I think to your point, being able to track the impact for patients, physicians, but also being able to measure the impact for business is sometimes difficult. And then I think thirdly, there is a cultural aspect of the challenge. To be able to innovate, or any organization need to be agile, need to be willing to take on a certain amount of risk to pilot and learn from that. And I think traditionally, biopharma companies, especially those who have had a lot of success, can be less willing to do that, right? So the risk appetite can sometimes be low. And the attitude of learning fast is something I think needs to be instilled more broadly. With the culture aspect, it's also linked to processes, because we can't have a culture of agile and nimble if our processes take too long, right? If it take you a year to set up a pilot, it's very hard for you to say after 2 months of the pilot, let's kill it, because we learned that this is not an effective approach. People get very attached to it after all that time and effort they've invested in the process. So I think the process needs to catch up with what we want to adapt in terms of culture.
That's super helpful. As you think about partnerships with digital health companies, do you have any advice to digital health companies out there who are interested in striking a partnership with pharma? What sort of elements of a partnership will make it successful versus not?
Yeah, it's funny you asked this question. This is one of the most frequently asked questions when I'm at conferences, on panels, and I've joked, again, business school audience, so I've joked that I have a 5P framework of successful pharma tech partnerships. The number one is definitely P for problem. It's really important from both the tech company and the pharma company's point of view to have a meaningful and clearly articulate problem. From a pharma point of view, I try to remind my team that we cannot be doing something because it's cool, because it's hype, because digital health is in vogue right now. It needs to be a real problem, a real unmet need that our customers have and our business also need to address. And from the tech company's point of view too, they need to have a solution that's well positioned to solve a problem that the pharma company have, and they shouldn't be approaching a collaboration just to build up their resume, so to speak, either. And that solution also have to be within the parameters of the pharma industry, as I mentioned. So that's number one. And I think the second one is proof. So clinical validation, regulatory clearance, proven consumer demand, those are all really important proof points that a digital health company should have when they approach a pharma company. Because again, where the pharma industry has not been the poster child for early adopters, part of that is because we're dealing with people's health and safety. So proof is always a really important point. Thirdly, people. It's very important to have the right people at the table. So approaching a pharma company, a digital health company will want to make sure they are reaching people who can really mobilize their organization for them. Again, for larger pharma, that will be a much more challenging process. And they will want to reach out to people at different levels who both have that senior executive influence, but also people who have that operating role who actually make things happen. And that's really important for the continuity of a project too, because it is a small industry and people move around a lot. So you don't want your sponsor to take a new job and then for the project to just wither because of that. And then fourth one, processes I've already talked about. It's really important on the pharma side to accelerate our processes and reevaluate which processes are relevant for digital innovation and how might need to be revised. And then from the project point of view, it's really important to define KPIs, define targets, stages of the project very clearly from the beginning, and then to have a very collaborative and open communication style of partnership. And I say lastly, but importantly, is patient physician centricity. Ultimately, our solutions are to benefit patients. So keeping that in mind, every step of the conception, the execution of the project is really important.
I think another consideration is around what the channel strategy and the business model will be, as in how are these digital therapeutics going to be delivered to patients and who is actually going to pay for them? Is it going to be a PDT, a prescribed digital therapeutic, in which physicians are actually prescribing this as if they would a drug and then payers are reimbursing? Or is there some sort of other model that needs to be established?
Yeah, this is a question that as an industry, pharma and digital health companies are still working through. Today, the reimbursement landscape for digital health is very unclear. There are only a few countries where we've seen more progress in this. So Germany is an example. With DiGA, now digital health solutions can be reimbursed through the government. And in the US, we've started to see digital therapeutics, for example, prescription digital therapeutics, like the ones from Pear Therapeutics, are getting reimbursement status. But I think the reality of payers, government payers in particular, paying for digital solutions is still really, really early. And then if we look at commercial payers, so health plans like the Cigna, Aetnas of the world, that's where we see the most activity for digital health, is health plans offering digital solutions. And then also employers who are either self-insured or large enough that they offer employee assistance program. So, you know, think about the Google, the JP Morgans of the world. I would say those are the two most common routes I've seen digital health companies go through. And then a portion of them have also tried the direct-to-consumer route, so consumers to pay out-of-pocket for the solution. And so if you think about a lot of the behavioral change, mental health solutions like Noom, Calm, Headspace, they do have a direct-to-consumer route and to different degrees of success. And then lastly, pharma, as we have talked about, is certainly a route, and there is willingness to pay for it when it does address a relevant patient, physician, payer unmet need and the business need for the pharma. I would say here, over the last couple of years, we've seen announcements of different partnerships, but the actual results and outcome, especially on patients, has yet to be seen as well. So that's the area, of course, I've been working a lot, but I would say we are all learning as we go.
Yeah. And when we think about TIC payers, for example, commercial or government, what do you think are the biggest barriers to reimbursement still? Is it simply just being able to quantify the outcomes and the cost savings perhaps with greater rigor, or is there something else too?
Yeah, I have to admit, I'm not an expert on government and commercial payer regulations. But my impression is, yes, very similar to you said, for a payer, right, just broadly speaking, the requirement for validation, for proof that I refer to, is even greater because the ultimate goal is to provide better care at lower cost to greater number of patients. So the amount of health economics validation that a payer will require, especially a government payer, can be very high. And that's where for a lot of digital health solutions, they don't currently have a really rigorous clinical validation documentation. So a lot of digital health companies are generating real-world evidence through their solutions being used by users. But the gold standard is still a randomized controlled trials. And that's a much more limited number of companies who have approached that. And I applaud those companies. And I think the companies who do have the RCTs and have demonstrated clinically significant impact are the ones who are having the more progress in achieving different levels of reimbursement.
I completely agree. And this also reminds me a lot of the conference that we were both at in April, hosted by McKinsey's Health Tech Network. Corey, the Paratherapeutics CEO, was there. And I just remember him talking about how they treat software development the exact same way that they would treat drug development, with the same level of rigor in terms of the design and the execution of their RCTs, and how they've also participated in the pre-certification program with the FDA to essentially co-create the processes and standards in place to establish these digital health solutions as prescription digital therapeutics that can be then reimbursed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Pear has been smart with that. Keeley has also been quite successful. Besides the RCT part, right, the other part is also software as medical device. So a lot of the solutions on the market are trying to deliver impact that will qualify them as software as medical device. But because of the sometimes daunting process of going through a 510K or de novo process for a class 2 plus medical device, a lot of companies have opted to either adjusting their intended use to be just a wellness solution, or they rely on the enforcement discretion of FDA. So even though their solution might function as a software as medical device, they are not actively regulated by the FDA. And I think this is the RCT piece and the medical device regulation piece are actually two differentiating opportunities with digital health companies. Those who are willing to embrace and embark on the journey for both, I think, will ultimately have much stronger data and validation to show to payers, to potential partners, and to consumers.
Yeah, and for the benefit of our audience, could you just add a little bit more color as to what it means to be a software as a medical device?
Sure, yeah. So a medical device is, there is a FDA clear guideline on it, But a medical device is essentially any solution that can affect the diagnosis, treatment, and management of a patient. And it's classified into 1, 2, 2A, 2B, and 3 by the risk that it can pose on a patient. So class one are solutions like a Band-Aid that doesn't really impose a lot of risk. And then class three will be solutions that can really impair a patient's health or even lead to death if it doesn't function properly, like a pacemaker or a surgical device. And class two, A to B, fall in between. So software as medical devices, mainly a software that function like a medical device. So it also affects the clinical diagnosis, treatment, and management of a patient. And then a lot of our digital health solutions on the market now are depends on their intended use, can be classified as either a wellness solution, right? If they don't say they're trying to impact the clinical management of patients, it's just, you know, to help them address a wellness issue. So meditations, like, you know, Headspace and Calm, their wellness solutions. Or if they do articulate their treatment is tended to treat condition like peer therapeutic solution or Achilles ADHD solutions, then it will be classified as AMD, usually class 2+.
Great. So you mentioned remote monitoring, obviously being catalyzed with COVID this year. I'm curious from your perspective, when we look at the next year, but also 5 years from now, what you think pharma's priorities will be as an industry when it comes to investing in tech?
Yeah, wow, you're asking for the crystal ball right now. I think if we look at just COVID's impact, for sure it's one of the silver linings of the pandemic is the spotlight it's shown on digital health and what technology can do in the clinical setting for patients. And so we've seen a tremendous amount of interest in digital health, but to me, the value of digital health has always been there, right? Part of it is intrinsic given its mechanism of action that you can help remove access barriers. You can offer care for patients at the time and place they need them. It's consistent in quality. It can generate more continuous data, more objective measurement, et cetera, et cetera. And so that wasn't changed by COVID and will continue to be here after COVID has passed eventually. But the other part of it, I think, the value of digital health is also dependent on its adoption. And that's where I see COVID has played the biggest impact, is the fact that it's pushed hospitals, physicians, health plans, patients, employers, even regulators to have to try using technology. And telemedicine is a great example here with the emergency provision for telemedicine consults to be reimbursed at the same rate as in-person consults. We know a lot of physicians and patients try doing that for the first time and actually saw it's not so bad. It actually can be very convenient. So a lot of that impact, I and a lot of my peers believe will stay. So we think in the next couple of years, as COVID eventually come to pass, there will be some reversing back to, you know, what healthcare has always been. But we do think there will be a lasting impact for greater interest, greater acceptance, and adoption of digital technologies.
It's definitely a silver lining of the pandemic is the step change it has had in terms of adoption in the industry. And I agree, I'm optimistic that things will stay and it will have that staying power. As we look back, what do you wish you knew about the healthcare world and digital health when you were an MBA?
Yeah, I say honestly, I didn't know much about the digital health world when I was an MBA. I remember when I was at HBS, because I knew I wanted to do healthcare. I feel like it's a very meaningful place where I can have an impact in people's lives and have a career at the same time. But most of the companies who came to campus are very established companies. So you have the big pharma, you have a couple biotech, and then you have large medical device companies. But they weren't really startups or growth stage digital health companies coming to recruit. So I think one thing I wish I knew is there are a lot more opportunities beyond what the information sessions are on campus. Actually, the role I took at Amgen wasn't posted on campus and they didn't come to recruit. at HBS for many years for a variety of reasons, but I was researching biotech and saw, well, this is one of the largest companies. How come I didn't apply to them? So I did, and eventually I also made sure they come to HBS now. But I think just being willing to go beyond what's available through the Career Hub and look at companies that are really interesting, that maybe fits into your own interests and ambition in the healthcare space. I think that's one. I think another one is maybe more broadly, not just about digital health. It just don't feel the pressure that you have to figure everything out about your career or about what you want to do with your life at the end of business school. I think business school is a really great time to have that reflection, to have the conversations with peers, with professors and alumni, but our learning journey doesn't stop there. So as one progresses in the career after business school, there will continue to be opportunities that come along. And I think so long as one is open to those opportunities, they will eventually come to realize more where their interests lie, where their skill sets lie, and where, you know, the so-called the greatest need of the world meets the greatest passion of us.
Another thing that stood out to me when you were talking about your early days post-HBS at Amgen was the experience you got going from commercial to sales to business intelligence and experiencing all these different functions. Is this something that you would recommend to other younger professionals who are looking to make their mark in digital innovation within biopharma? Being able to understand all those different functions within pharma, perhaps before jumping into digital innovation?
Yeah, I personally benefited a lot from that learning process. And I think part of that is, admittedly, before business school, my experience in healthcare was limited to the provider side from working at Princess Margaret. So I didn't know a lot from personal experience, the different types of roles in a biotech pharma company. So to me, it was really helpful to be able to try different functions and see what's the day-to-day like. I think some of that obviously can be achieved by having conversations with people. So if someone has more exposure to an industry or they have a strong network to begin with, maybe some of that can be a shortcut through. I benefited a lot from it, and I would recommend it for people who are maybe newer to the industry for sure.
Great. I think those are all the questions I had on my mind. Any parting words or last thoughts for the audience?
Digital health is at a really exciting time. And I think if more and more talented, driven young people like the HBS students and alumni are interested in this space, I'm excited for what we can all accomplish for patients together.
Me too. Thanks so much, Lauren.